At first glance, President Franklin D. Roosevelt and Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia were quite the political odd couple. One, a Democrat who was the son of old Dutch New York, and the other, a Republican who was the son of immigrants. Yet, during the Great Depression, they came together to create a national recovery plan that would lift millions of Americans from poverty. In City of Ambition, FDR LaGuardia and the Making of Modern New York, Mason B. Williams relates how, together, they were able to change the role of American government and, in the process, laid the groundwork for the modern New York City. It's published by W.W. Norton, and I'm very pleased that it brings Mason B. Williams to our show. Hello.
I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for having me.
Mayor LaGuardia once referred to the two of them as the son of the revolution and the son of steerage. Wasn't it reflected in the way they talked?
Well, it was. Roosevelt had a famously patrician accent, and if you listen to some of LaGuardia's radio broadcasts on WNYC and other places, he, despite not having grown up in New York, had a tremendous New York accent, for sure.
It was almost, it's almost a miracle that he did appear on WNYC, because it was, at one point he thought that he would shut down the station to save some money.
That's right. In the early 30s, New York City was bankrupt, as it typically is during economic recessions. And one thing that could be thought
not
of
the latest
as,
one.
As a cost-saving measure was doing away with what was then a very young municipal broadcasting station. But as a consequence of the New Deal, in fact, WNYC was expanded. It got modern transmission facilities, which served it all the way up to 1990, I believe.
How long had President Roosevelt's family been in America?
Well, since before there was an America. Roosevelt's family wealth was tied in very deep ways to the early commercial development of New Amsterdam and then New York, although his family decamped for the Hudson Valley pretty early on in the 19th century.
Among the early Dutch settlers. Mm-hmm. And mostly Republicans, weren't they? His cousin Teddy Roosevelt was a pretty famous Republican.
That's right, although Franklin Roosevelt's father was a Democrat, was a supporter of Samuel Tilden and Grover Cleveland, upstate Democrats. Famously, in the 20s, 30s, there was a partisan dispute between the two lines of the Roosevelt family.
Didn't FDR once write a school paper about his family and why they were so successful?
That's right. It just goes to show you how deeply his own sort of conception of his role in history was embedded in his own family's narrative, for sure.
He grew up on his family's estate in Hyde Park. Did that country estate upbringing shape his views on society?
It did. Even as he was presiding over a national program that really helped America's cities, FDR was always kind of ambivalent about urban America. Like many country gentlemen, he believed in a sort of moral superiority of a country lifestyle, being close to nature and a sort of permanence of abode and so forth. And was deeply uneasy with just how far urbanization had advanced.
On the other hand, Fiorello LaGuardia was born in Greenwich Village to immigrant parents, although he did at one point move to Arizona, small-town America, Prescott, Arizona.
That's right. His father was an Army band leader. And though born in New York, LaGuardia really grew up first in the Dakota Territory and then in Arizona. He didn't really become a New Yorker until his mid-20s, when he came back to the United States from having served as a consul abroad.
And yet he sounded like the typical New Yorker of the time.
He did.
He did have a New York accent.
And this is a very fascinating part of his biography, is the fact that he really, he embraced the city as somebody who comes from elsewhere does. And he learned how to be a New Yorker, much as he learned, incidentally, to be an Italian, because he had not grown up among Italian Americans.
Well, his mother was Jewish, and his
father
was
Jewish. His father was Italian, yes.
From Italy. Where?
From Italy, from southern Italy, from the Mezzogiorno.
In the 1920s, the nation was embroiled in a debate over immigration, and at the time, New York was being condemned as an alien city. How did LaGuardia respond when the New York World asked all members of Congress to submit their family genealogies?
Right. This is the World was a liberal publication and was in support of a multicultural attitude toward this. LaGuardia wrote in jest that he had no family tree. The only family he had with any distinguished lineage was that of his dog, and he traced it back several generations, employing these sort of ridiculous Wagnerian opera character dog names, and said at the end of the day, this dog is still a son of a bitch, which is an emblem of how he was in the 20s, irreverent and quirky, but really an arrow to the heart of the facile pieties of that decade.
Hadn't LaGuardia's father died while he was awaiting deployment for the Spanish-American War?
He was. Achille LaGuardia, Fiorello's father, took ill apparently as a result of ingesting some bad meat, which was supplied to the army by a contractor. This was probably only one contributing factor to his death several years later. However, Fiorello LaGuardia maintained that his father had died as a result of corruption. And this sort of furthered what was his already present tendency to see the world in terms of the corrupt and the virtuous, the interests and the people.
How old was he when his father died?
Late teens, I think maybe 18 when he died.
And when did he return to New York City? What prompted this return?
He was very happy in many ways serving in the consulate in Southern Europe. However, he found he could not move up within the State Department as he wanted. He was ambitious.
He had gotten a government job.
He had gotten a government
job.
But
he hadn't gone to law school yet.
So he decided to come back to the United States, and after a brief period settled in New York and enrolled in night classes at the New York University Law School with the idea of making a career in politics.
Well, how did he support himself?
He was working during the day as a translator on Ellis Island during the real peak years of that facility. He would rush down in the morning, work all day, come back up, have a bite of dinner, and then off to law school.
My guest is Mason B. Williams. His book, City of Ambition, FDR, LaGuardia, and the Making of Modern New York. When did he meet FDR, or when did FDR meet LaGuardia?
They first met under somewhat unusual circumstances. LaGuardia won entry to Congress right before American entry into the First World War, and stood up during a floor debate and said that he was enlisting to go serve. If he was going to vote for people to be drafted, he would serve. So he was in the air service, and he was deployed in Italy. FDR at that time was Assistant Secretary of Navy in the Wilson administration, was on a tour of Europe, meeting European officials. And they first met in Turin as Roosevelt was getting off the train en route to Rome. They spoke briefly. This happened also to be the trip on which FDR first met Winston Churchill, and it became a subject of some embarrassment for Churchill during the Second World War when it became clear that Roosevelt remembered this meeting very well and Churchill didn't. In comparison to that, Roosevelt and LaGuardia remembered this first meeting so well that years later they were able to recall in pretty good detail what they talked about that day.
And they were in the opposition parties.
They were.
How did LaGuardia, who it seems to me whose history would suggest he would have become a Democrat, it was the party of the immigrants.
That's right.
At the time, how did he wind up becoming a Republican?
It has partly to do with the fact that he didn't grow up in New York. He always considered himself a Westerner, and when he thought of entering politics, he took his cues in large measure from other Westerners, other Western progressives, men such as Senator Robert La Follette and Senator Hiram Johnson and George Norris of Nebraska and others, all Republicans, progressive Republicans. And that, and I think also the fact that he saw he would be able to advance more quickly within the minority party in New York helps to explain why he became a Republican.
There's also the problem of Tammany Hall, wasn't there?
Right. LaGuardia came to anti-Tammany politics a bit later than people think. He was not you know, to the reform cause born. But he did, growing up in Arizona, read in the New York World, which got out there about a week after it was published, about some of the scandals in which Tammany was embroiled at the turn of the century. So he was always opposed to the Tammany Hall political machine.
Well, FDR was governor of New York from 1929 until 1932. How did he deal with Tammany?
Well, it was very difficult for him because as a Democrat in New York State, he could not be completely opposed to the machine in the city, which controlled the largest block of votes within the party and was essential to his legislative program and other things. But on the other hand, he was always had one eye on national office. And to be too closely aligned with the New York political machine was not good for him either. It would be an obstacle to his presidential ambitions. And so he tried to straddle the fence as long as he could. And it turned out that this became an unsustainable situation. And he launched in 1931 and 32, a major investigation into corruption in the city, which resulted ultimately in LaGuardia's coming to power.
Well, Jimmy Walker was the infamous mayor of New York at the time. Mm-hmm. He was tainted by lots of scandals.
Yes.
I mean, that had nothing to do with political scandals. He had a lot of personal scandals.
A lot of personal scandals also. He was phenomenally popular, and he actually, if it hadn't been for the personal scandals, might have survived the political scandals. But in September 1932, he was, Roosevelt was considering whether or not to remove Walker from office. Walker, for a bunch of reasons, which are still somewhat shrouded in mystery, decided enough was enough and he was going to resign and promptly sailed to Europe with his mistress.
Roosevelt's predecessor in the governor's office was Alfred E. Smith, who ran for president. Mm-hmm. Lost because of the anti-Catholic vote at the time, with anti-Catholic sentiments. What was his relationship with Tammany Hall?
Smith was the first major American politician to be a creature of Tammany. I mean, he rose at every step because of his relationship to the political machine. And yet he seemed able in some ways to transcend it. He brought experts into the state government, and in the 20s, as a consequence of Smith's success as governor, many progressives started seeing the Democratic machine in different ways, thinking it might be an instrument for enacting progressive measures. That sort of blows up a bit as a consequence of Walker's tenure as mayor, though.
Didn't Roosevelt once comment that all the things he did during the New Deal were things that Governor Smith had already done in New York State?
That's right. He did, and to a degree anyway. He certainly saw himself as following in some of Smith's footsteps, although Smith himself later became a staunch anti-New Dealer, again, for reasons that are somewhat difficult to parse.
What was his opinion of Roosevelt at first? You like him?
Well, early on, in the 1920s, Smith, who was very powerful in New York State as governor and the leading politician, thought he could use Roosevelt to great effect. Roosevelt was a person who had run for vice president in 1920, had a famous name and was well-liked, but seemed to be out of politics because he had gone through his polio episode, and there was no precedent for a person in that condition to attain major office in the United States. So Smith used Roosevelt for his own ends, which enabled Roosevelt, ironically, to restart his own political career.
Now, Roosevelt had polio. Mm-hmm. LaGuardia's mother and his wife and his infant daughter
had
tuberculosis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did that draw them together?
At about the same time, yeah. It would be difficult to say if that, per se helped bring them together, although what it did do was for both of them at the same time to be forced to be really creative about how they imagined their political careers.
I never thought I'd say this, but didn't Tammany also do some good things? They pushed through workmen's compensation and the direct election of U.S. senators in New York State.
That's right. There's a moment in shortly before the First World War when Tammany really does start pushing for social legislation, which is going to get enacted at the state level starting then and continuing through Smith's governorship and then in the nation in the 1930s.
You write that New York was slower to be affected by the stock market crash of 29 than the rest of the nation. Why was that?
That's right. The Great Depression struck first at heavy manufacturing, and New York had a much more diverse economy than a place like Detroit or even Chicago in some ways. And so it didn't suffer quite as much early, and it never really suffered the same degree of catastrophic collapse that those cities did. Unemployment in those cities was in some cases, in excess of 50%. In New York, it ran probably between 25 and 35%.
Was New York driving the nation's economy to some degree?
Well, to some degree. New York was much more central in some ways in 1930 than it is today. 5.6% of the nation's population lived in New York then. Today, it's about the same in the entire New York metro area. But certainly, the stock market crash had an important actual economic effect in addition to, scaring people and sort of inciting a psychological response.
Mm-hmm. If Roosevelt had had his way after he was elected, New York would have had a smaller percentage. Didn't he think one of the problems of the unemployment problem was to relocate urban residents to the countryside, which sounds kind of Maoist to me?
That's right. This is a part of history that sounds almost ludicrous because it didn't come to pass. But while FDR was governor, we talked a moment ago about how he sort of had a country person's belief in the moral superiority of rural life. Once the Depression came, he also thought that overpopulation of the cities was one of the great problems. Economic problems that had helped result in the Depression. And one of his measures for meeting it was to give urbanites assistance in moving to rural areas where they would be able to support themselves partly through subsistence agriculture.
But, mm-hmm. of course, as we see later in his relationship with LaGuardia, the solution he came up with was to funnel money into cities.
That's right.
LaGuardia is elected 2 years after Roosevelt becomes president. Did they immediately establish a good relationship?
Well, FDR had actually tried to defeat LaGuardia in the 1933 mayoral election. This is an indication of how important it was to him to have a Democrat in City Hall to help build the party in New York, to help reconstruct it in some ways after the Tammany excesses. But pretty soon after that, this episode is forgotten, and they start working together very effectively.
And Roosevelt and LaGuardia are criticized at the time for funneling more money into New York than any other city. How much money did New York get compared to the other cities, and what was the rationale for that?
Well, there are two programs that are at the center of this. One is the Works Progress Administration, or the WPA. The other is the Public Works Administration, or the PWA. This distinction gets somewhat confusing. But the key point is that the WPA operated on the principle that the federal government would pay people who were certified as in need by local authorities to work on local projects.
It's what we call today a stimulus package, the last thing a Republican mayor would agree to in today's political climate.
Well, they might raise all kinds of fuss about it, but once the money starts coming in, it looks a bit different, sometimes at least. And so New York did get a lot of money, in part because The LaGuardia appointees, including people like Robert Moses — he's probably the most important one, but by no means the only energetic administrator LaGuardia appointed — really are quick to devise ways of using these resources.
So how much of New York today is the result of what LaGuardia, Moses, and FDR did?
Because FDR decided to meet the unemployment crisis by reallocating productive resources into municipal governments, there is a tremendous physical legacy in New York from this period. You can start with the big projects, the Lincoln Tunnel, the Queens Midtown Tunnel, the West Side Highway and Henry Hudson Parkway, the FDR Drive, LaGuardia Airport.
Triborough Bridge.
The Triborough Bridge. But it also goes down to a very local level as well. There are 11 swimming pools scattered across the city, which remain, lots of them, very heavily used today.
McCarran Pool recently reopened.
Mm-hmm.
Schools, hospitals, parks,
neighborhood playgrounds, all sorts of things.
What was happening in Chicago and Los Angeles and other major cities?
Well, those cities that you mentioned actually have a lot to show from this period also. Los Angeles, I think some of the campus of UCLA was a public works project from the New Deal era. Chicago, the loop, the central section of the mass transit system, likewise, public works administration project.
Now, did Roosevelt and Robert Moses kind of hate each other?
They did, for deeply personal reasons.
And then later, almost everybody came to hate Robert Moses.
Yeah, FDR was in on it very early. This spite and animus continued into the 30s, and LaGuardia had to spend some time troubleshooting it, actually. But they discovered that they could use each other to mutual effect. Roosevelt needed that money to go out in very useful and productive ways, and Moses needed the money.
Were New Yorkers aware of this exchange between the federal and the local government?
Well, I think they were. Certainly over time, they came to understand that the Republican mayor and the Democratic president stood for the same things. And one way you can see this is in looking at the voting returns. In 1933, most of the people who had cast ballots for FDR the year before in the presidential election did not vote for Fiorello LaGuardia. By 37, and especially 41, when LaGuardia gets elected for the third time, most New Yorkers are voting for both of them.
Although LaGuardia becomes a non-party kind of figure, today he would be seen as a kind of a Democrat, although some of his ideas, like closing down, smashing pinball machines, closing down burlesque, and some of the other things he did, might not be all that popular with the civil libertarians.
That's right. LaGuardia remained a Republican pretty much until the end, although it was clear that he had alienated enough people within the party that the door was going to close at a certain point.
Was he seen even then as an unconventional Republican?
He began his career. The thing about LaGuardia is the Republican Party changed during his career.
Well, Dewey was governor while he was mayor.
And there are still liberal Republicans for a couple decades after him, but it's ending pretty soon after that.
Mason B. Williams' book, City of Ambition, FDR, LaGuardia, and the Making of Modern New York, is published by W.W. Norton. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
This was terrific. Thank you for having me.